You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, you're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Mason Dixon, joined by Corey, the Bayou Benders, and this is Habs Nightly, your hub for Habs content. Here on a blizzardy night in Ottawa and probably a much warmer one in New Orleans. How are you, Corey?
I'm doing fine, yeah. It's a bit of a late one tonight. Just trying to make things work and trying to have decent audio. It's warmer, but it is cold, I guess you could say, for Louisiana. It's 42 right now in the parish, but it's nowhere near as fucking cold as a blizzard going on in Ottawa right now.
Yeah, I know. We're expected to get like, I think it's like 40, 50 centimeters of snow Monday. So should be fun though, nonetheless. Montreal played Chicago the day of our last recording, and we didn't get to talk about it much, but kind of a roller coaster of emotions there at the end.
Yeah, the team actually came out really strong. A first for Jeff Petrie this season. And I mean, once that happened, I got excited. I was talking about Jeff Petrie's back on track for the Norris this year. I saw you picked him up in fantasy. And then we get a power play goal with Mike Hoffman. So I'm like, okay. You know, I think we might have, you know, this game is actually looking really good. Going to the third period, fucking Patrick Kane scores. I'm like, motherfucker. Of course, it's a power play goal. And was it, if I'm not mistaken, was that off of, I want to get into the hit a little bit. Was that because of the Romanov hit, the cleanest hit ever, and he had to fight for it?
The power play goal, you mean? Yeah. Montreal scored that off of the instigator penalty.
Okay. Never mind. I thought that happened because, I mean, I thought the Patrick Kane goal was off of that monstrous hit by Romanov. It's been a couple days since. So
no, yeah. So Romanov threw an absolute bomb, cleanest hit in the world. And for some reason, every time he nails someone now, he has to fight for it. And I actually loved his answer. One of the reporters asked him about it. And he said, you know, sometimes you have to drop the gloves. And he just kind of paused and goes, I'm always ready. And I just loved that. I thought that was a badass answer. So.
That's awesome. I love it. I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate he's going to have, you know, he has to do that.
It shouldn't be. It's a fucking kidding's in the game. Okay. Yeah. And it's not like he hit a superstar. He hit Sam fucking Lafferty, a fourth liner.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he should have to answer the bell, but I love that at such a young age, he's just trying to make an impact in a game, and he's really fucking good at it, and he's not afraid to fight, you know. Something I really like about him.
Yeah, no, and Russian in the KHL, they're not allowed to fight, so it's a little different.
He's for a Russian bit of a players, rare but... breed for that. I just love that because like we really haven't had that in some time on this team, and I love that this kid's playing, you know, damn near 20 minutes in a game, and he's still explosive like that. You know, I mean, when was the last real guy that was like that? Maybe like Lars Eller or something that like would throw the body that hard and then like had no problem fighting, you know, like
Lars Eller had no problem fighting and throwing the body.
Who am I thinking? No, I'm sorry. Emelin.
Lars Eller. I was going to say, so this does not seem, I don't think we watched the same player.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was a little mix up. Couple of E sounding guys.
Yeah, but I hope Romanov, I really hope, does not turn into an Alexei Emelin. I hope he becomes something more than that.
No, I think his, yeah, I don't want to jinx him, but I think his ceiling is much higher. He's just, despite like the high end hitting and the defensive oriented play, he's really, really good offensively too. So I really see him like developing into just one of the best two-way defensemen in the league. And I wouldn't say soon. I think he's got a little bit more time. But it's just impressive to see that this kid's like, no matter how bad of a season we're having, he's making strides, you know, for his future.
No, definitely. And I think that Romanov is going to be able to bring more of an offensive edge. I think it's an absolute tragedy he's still yet to be used in overtime, considering the guy plays 3-on-3 all summer. But I think next year, Romanov is going to really kind of come out and really explode under hopefully a new head coach who utilizes him properly, because he's already used the minutes. He plays the minutes. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't get the offensive time, the offensive zone, the offensive opportunities on the power play and overtime, et cetera, that I think he deserves.
Yeah. We're starting to see like bits of it, like in the Chicago game, which I was, kind of expecting a win after Jeff Petry. See, oh man, I was fighting a fucking sneeze that I did not want to happen. Excuse me, where were we? But yeah, you know, we're finally starting to see it. I expect a little bit more than 15 seconds on the power play, but we're starting to see him being utilized on both sides of the power play and PK. 1-for-4, you know, he didn't really he did get an assist that game off of the Jeff Petry goal. So finding a way to stand out, kudos to him. But another guy that had an opportunity, we brought him up at the end of the episode last week. It's been a week just about. But Rem Pitlick, another pickup by Jeff Gordon. Every time I've gotten it I've got like a thing in my head to remember Jeff Gordon and like situations where like I'm in a blank on his name, and now I can't stop thinking of the NASCAR driver. So when I go to say it, I just picture a fucking rainbow colored NASCAR. It's so Southern. But we go and pick up Rem Pitlick, and then Jay Fresh posted on about him. And I mean, the kid looks solid. If you look at his WAR percentile that Jay Fresh always puts up. But I mean, the kid's got 6 goals this year. I guess just things weren't working with Minnesota. I think it's because Minnesota's kind of has a lock on their team. He was kind of filling in spaces during like the COVID scare that they had going on. But I think it's a decent pickup. I guess I could say I wanted to see a little bit more out of him in the Chicago game, but then again, it's a brand new guy on a team that's, I mean, looking to make. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I agree with you. I thought he played well. I think he just wasn't selfish enough against Chicago. There were 2 opportunities I could think of, one especially where he basically had the whole net by himself and he was passing the whole way and he tried to go for the pass and didn't work out. I think part of that is joining a new team.
Yeah, like the uncomfortability.
Yeah.
Maybe not set in just enough.
Once he starts shooting, then I think he'll get, you know, I think we'll start seeing some offensive production from Rem Pitlick. I think he has all the skill set and I think he's going to get all the opportunity on a team that is going to finish dead last, right?
Mm-hmm. And we leaned on him very heavy. He played 1 second under 19 minutes, only below Nick Suzuki with a 20 minute game. You know, we had brought him up, like I said, at the end of last episode. I figured we wouldn't talk about him just because, you know, we could just bring him up after his first game. Definitely was utilized a lot. And that might be one of the best things Dom Ducharme has done this season is give a kid that just came on, that has had success with a team that's really, really hot right now, to bring him on and kind of let him stay on the ice and get, I guess, accumulated. Oh my God.
Acclimated.
Thank you. Acclimated to this team and how it plays. So, I mean, kudos to him. I think the kid, I don't think the kid's going to turn around and have, you know, like, the luck for this season with us, but I think it's not a bad addition. Picked him up at fucking waivers. What could really hurt us, you know, even if it's just a small acquiring. I mean, he's only 24 years old. He was picked up early in the third round. He was a 76 overall, so that's very early in the third. And he's, I mean, that I think it's league minimum. If I'm not mistaken, he's 9.917. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's making league, close to league minimum. Yeah. Entry-level contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, what's the worst that happens? We just pay for him half a year, and if he doesn't stay, he doesn't stay. Okay, you know, we'll see. But he moved twice. He's... drafted, if I'm not mistaken, drafted to Nashville. He had 11 games in Nashville. He gets traded to Minnesota. Has a fuck that just happened. Jesus, I had a pretty decent stint with Minnesota. I mean, played this season. Jesus, played 20 games with Minnesota. Got 6 goals and 5 assists for 11 points. I mean, fuck. I know there's some guys like the kids on Detroit that are having a pretty good call of the year, but this kid's got to be pretty close. This hasn't been the best year for rookies, but nevertheless, I mean, he was doing pretty good. I think it's a solid pickup. And with the kid playing that many minutes on his first night with the team, I can expect some goodness from it though. But tough game to lose, especially since, you know, it's not many times we go up unless we're playing Tampa this season, and then we just let it fucking crumble in the final moments of the game.
Well, yeah, I really like Rem Pitlick's potential. I don't think he's going to be a superstar, and I think his shooting percentage is a big reason why his WAR is so high this season. Mm-hmm. However, I do think he is going to be able to contribute, and I think he could be a very good addition and contributor to this team. And like you said, it was good to see Montreal come out and play well against the Chicago in the Chicago game. But I guess the refs are team tank, because that was the biggest bunch of bullshit I've ever seen. I don't care about the new rules. The new rules are, if you have possession, you can carry, you know, you can basically be offside and carry it in. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Kurashev had possession on that play, and I was baffled. I could not believe that was an offside. That is the most cut and dry offside play I've ever seen. Yeah. And so then, to lose that one was a little heartbreaking, I'll be honest.
And then have the secondary assist on a key member of last year's run, Gustafsson. Oh, I'll probably said the name wrong again. but yeah, it was, I mean, it kind of seems how it is for this team. We get a little bit of luck, and then we just let it, you know, it kind of falls away, either our fault or, you know, the refs overlook something. But moving on a little bit, today's Sunday. You guys are going to hear us tomorrow. But we did have a practice today. The guys made it down to the Gila River Arena. I had a schedule to play, when you guys are hearing this, play Arizona. But there's talks of having, which is exciting. I mean, fuck, if you're a Habs fan, I'm sure you're excited about this. Paul Byron is expected to join the Canadiens at some point this week on the road. I don't think it'll be playing in a game. You know, I think it'll just be like conditioning and stuff like that again. But to have this guy finally riding, you know, with the team and working with them again is a huge step forward. I can't believe it's been, you know, just about this entire season. The season's, you know, getting close to being over, and we're finally getting him back. A couple of guys also coming back. Josh Anderson is playing contact finally. Tyler Toffoli's back. Cedric Paquette's back, but both are under no contact right now. So a bit of the team is starting to get back together. But when I saw Paul Byron, I was like, oh, thank God. You know, like, it's so crazy to think, like, you know, last year we were talks of, like, people that might be leaving, and Paul Byron was one of them. And then Paul Byron has, like, an unbelievable off-season. Well, not off-season, but playoffs. I mean, I'll never forget that fucking goal on Toronto. He feels like he's a real glue member of this team. Really, like, stay-at-home type of guy.
And it feels like we haven't had him for the longest time, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been injured for the whole season and parts of the playoffs. So,
and it's crazy. It'll be really nice to
get Byron back.
You know, we always talk about, like, I mean, look at this, like, possible fourth line. Like, it's been, like, kind of a wash this season. And it's, like, a guy like Paul Byron, who's kind of been our fourth line hero. It's, like, there's been so many times in these games where I'm, like, fuck, man, if only we had Paul Byron. Like, someone that can kind of hold this fourth line or third line together at some nights. And he's just been really, really missed. But it's great to see that he's going to be around the team. Hopefully some of that like really driving fun energy that he brings kind of rubs off on this team. I'm not expecting us to go on any type of run. I've kind of accepted where we are. You know, I like the chance of a top three pick, but nonetheless, happy to have him back around the squad. Starting to feel like the Canadians are coming back. Feels like this is a brand new team with like three older guys in it, and that's it.
It feels like it's a revolving cast of just different fourth line, third line guys who come in, and every once in a while we'll get one of our veteran guys, our core players back. Then another one will get injured. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen the healthy Habs roster since day one, and that's because Carey Price and Byron have been out, and Drouin was out. Like it, this season, from not just a points aspect, but an injury front, has been a total disaster for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, it's like reminiscent of, I want to say, 2015 or six. I don't think it was 16. I think it was 15. It was the year that we played. We had the Winter Classic. It was like half the team felt like it was injured. And that's kind of how it feels right now. It's like we basically, you know, everybody on the ball that has been waiting to get their shot has had nothing but chances this year, which is I'm happy about. But at the same time, it's like, fuck, just to bring in someone like Paul Byron, like to come up and finally be healthy would just be amazing to see, you know, especially after last year, like the talk of, you know, they weren't sure if they, you know, we weren't sure if Paul Byron was going to get signed again. And then he is, and then he's not here. And it's like, fuck, dude. Like, you know, of all the times that we kind of, you know, as fans could have pushed him off to the side, especially last year when we had so much good going on and Paul Byron was kind of, you know, getting pushed to the side. Fuck, can we use him now? That speed, that fucking, that shot, shorthanded goals have been like, you know, basically unexisting this season. Fucking power play goals have been just about unexisting this season too. But just I happy mean, to
every,
have him back.
Every around. Season power play goals have been nonexistent. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, last year was fun.
The penalty kill was good though. And I don't know. It's tough to say anything's been done well this season, but I think with the addition of Rem Pitlick and, you know, some smart moves that we've seen in Jeff Gorton so far, just good things he's done, picking up Sammy Niku right away, who Ducharme immediately benched, but that's beyond the point. I think there are things to be hopeful with this Habs team, and another reason for that is we're approaching finally hiring a GM to lead this organization in this rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, fuck, another thing Jeff Gordon's, you know, been working tirelessly on. And I saw on Twitter someone, like, people are apparently getting aggravated at how long this has taken. And I don't see a problem with it. This, if we got a GM right away, it's still not solving how bad this team is this year. Nothing, you know, a GM coming in is not going to change it. Why not take your time and pick the right candidate for it? I want to get this done, but I also want to get this done the right way. And I want like a future. I don't want like a, you know, a three-year GM that doesn't do anything, or, you know, we let the wrong one slip away because we had a GM signed within, you know, a week or 2 weeks. But yeah, apparently we're down. I'm seeing multiple things. I'm seeing people saying it's down to three. I'm seeing it's down to four, but, Daniel Briere, Matthew Darche is like the top two names I'm seeing right now. And then yesterday I saw that they had doubled back to talk to Kent Hughes, who is the father of Jack Hughes, who is going to be – he's a highly sought-after draft-eligible player this year. And his other son – Riley Hughes, who Gorton was the GM of the Rangers. He was selected by the Rangers in 2016. So I think that's pretty cool. But at the same time, it's like, if I'm not mistaken, Mason, he's a, what is it? He's an agent, right? He's a player.
Yeah, he's a player agent.
Yeah, that's right. He's working with, what's the name of the company? Damn, I had it highlighted, but of course, when I change tabs, it goes away. Anyway, he's working with a firm that hires mainly Quebec native players. So I think he's got, his biggest one I know is going to be like, I think they said, no, not Brad Marchand. It's the guy that always gets the fucking, the Selke.
Patrice Bergeron,
yeah. Fuck, man, I'm like fucking two for one right now. It's terrible. Some other guys is Chris Letang, Mike Matheson, Marco Scandella and Sammy Blaze. But I mean, also former Canadians defenseman Nathan Nathan Beaulieu, that's it. I don't know how I feel about having a player agent turn GM. I'm sure there's been ones in the past, but I don't really see someone like Kent walking away from so much money to come be a GM of a team that needs a turnaround. I think there's guys that are a lot more qualified than him, preferably like Matthew Darr, since we've given up on Mark Madden Jr. But I'm also reading a lot of stuff that it's, they're still interviewing people that could have jobs in the organization. So maybe this double back is not for a GM role, but the double back instead is for, you know, a possible scouting or some type of, you know, in-house office work or some shit. I still, even with the news of this coming up, I still think that the Matthew Darsh is still the fan favorite right now. I don't know too many people that really want Patrick Waugh behind the scenes, but I still my hat's still with Matthew Darsh right now.
I think I've always been rooting for, well, I know I've been rooting for Matthew Darsh since the start. I was also a big fan of Martin Madden Jr., but Darsh has been 1-2 on my list for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So I'd be very happy if Matthew Darsh was hired. Julian Brisebois has sung his praise, and we know that that Tampa organization has been successful, and he's played a role in that.
Yeah, why not bring over someone that can, I wouldn't say share secrets, but share, you know, this is how we did things there. You're going to have a great partner in Jeff Gordon to help you get acclimated into it. So I think he's kind of in a perfect position, you know, to have an easy step into a GM role.
No, I agree. And I think on the other hand, you have Kent Hughes, who I think really intrigues me because he is kind of an unknown commodity among the general public, but those on the beat and those in the know seem to really sing his praises and think it would be a good hire. So I think that's really interesting to me. There are plenty of player agents who have become Stanley Cup winning GMs. Brian Burke is one of them. And say what you want about Brian Burke, had a lot of good hockey teams, one of them won a Stanley Cup. Kent Hughes, I think, is really interesting in that regard. And I don't think any of the three guys named, I think Briere, if that would be hired, would leave me the least enthusiastic. But if I had to put money on it right now, I'd say Darsh and Hughes are probably the top two candidates going forward.
Yeah. People like Eric Engels, LeBron, Friedman, they're all the top. You know, those are the two names that are being brought up the most. Like I said, I didn't know much about Kent, you know, like you said, there have been agents that have turned and taken GM roles and have been effective. I like the fact that they're looking outside of the box, and everyone that they're looking at has their own uniqueness about it. You know, I like that we're not just picking hats of like old regime members. Like if they think he could work, he gets an interview. And I think that's really important to like really modernize this team and kind of get some of the cobwebs off from older, outdated outlooks, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think we need to give time for Jeff Gordon and whoever he hires to put their fingerprints on this organization, because right now it's all Mark Bergevin and Trevor Timmons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Montreal fans are going to have to do something that they're not used to doing and they don't like doing, and that's to be patient. Because there's some good drafts coming up. We're going to get a good player in this year's draft. We're going to get a good player in next year's draft. Let's be honest, we're in for a couple years of pain. And we're going to also have young guys that we already have growing in this organization. Hopefully we'll get Jordan Harris. We don't know. But if we don't, we have Sean Farrell. We have Cole Caulfield. We have Nick Suzuki. We have Romanov. We have Arbor Jack guy. We have Jan Meshack. We've got a bunch of guys. Norlander.
Matthias Norlander
are phenomenal, right? And I think there's a lot of things to be positive about, even though we still have 46 games left of this dreadful season.
I mean, yeah, and you make a great point. Like, the future's really bright for this organization. Like, the future's coming up, or there's just so much potential to have, like, excellent, really great players. I don't see why we would rush, you know, to just have someone in office. He's not going to change the next, you know, year, 2 years, 3 years of this team learning a new system and growing up together, basically, because it's we're moving towards a very young team. And there's no reason to rush, you know, a decision, a big decision at that, you know. So a lot of people upset, want the shit over with. I don't give a fuck. Take your time. I'd rather the perfect person available than some guy that is just a francophone. You know, like people were tripping about Kent, I believe.
Born and raised in Montreal.
Yep. People saying, you know, I mean, basing it off of Hughes doesn't sound like a French name, apparently. You know, we got really opinionated, real judgmental, and Scott's from there, you know. So it's just the fans at this point, you know. But I like the patient approach. No, Jeff Gordon hasn't done anything I've been upset with yet. I like the way that he's handling things right now. And until he does something wrong, I have his back, you know. I'm going to stand by him. I don't have his back. I don't know him personally.
No, it makes sense. And I think we have a lot of reason to have faith in Jeff Gordon. I think he's going to make the right decisions.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, he really is steering us in the right direction so far, so I have nothing but the best hopes for him. I'm actually not upset that he's taking his time. It shows he cares, you know. One thing that we said about Matthew Darche is that he understood what it meant to wear the uniform, you know, to, you know, some players in the past, like, I mean, even Pezzetta, we brought it up two episodes back, they understand what it's like to wear the crest. I think Jeff Gordon, who might not be from here, understands how important this legacy is, you know.
Came from Boston and New York. He understands.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, you actually make a point. Yeah. Two original six teams. Now he's in another one. Knows exactly how important it is. You know, this is one of the top fuck, they said it on Spittin' Chicklins. It was like it's in like the top five most I guess expensive organizations or whatever. But I mean, of course, it's an original six team. There's a lot of pride with it. I think Jeff Gordon understands the role and takes it fucking as serious as it can be. So let him take his time. But let's move on. We have a read from our sponsors over at DraftKings. At first, I didn't understand why we were still talking about the wild card, but I didn't realize that when you guys hear this, there's a wild card game that night. But the NFL playoffs are here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is kicking things off with a huge offer. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, new customers can get 56-1 odds on the last wild card team to win their game. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team is victorious. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you still have something to play for this huge wild card weekend. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code THPN this wild card weekend at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, a $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Hopefully our fans betted on fucking the Bucks or the 49ers. I think the craziest one, though, was the Bills just absolutely fucking skull-dragging the Patriots. Joe Burrow with a monstrous win on his first drive. He's surpassed Andy Dalton. I was about to say, what's the other redhead? Andy Dalton's postseason touchdowns, which blows my mind.
In one game.
Yeah, and one game on the first set of downs, or the first, you know, the first full drive for that team. Unfortunately, I guess not unfortunate, I'm a Ravens fan, but the Steelers lost 42-21, like an hour or two before we recorded. Ben Roethlisberger is now retiring after a long-ass career. I can't believe they even made it to the fucking the wild card, but kudos to him. I don't really know shit about the Rams or the Cardinals. I don't really watch football anymore, but I'm a pull for the Cardinals. Why not? Arizona needs something to look forward to, kind of like us. But hopefully put your money on the right people this weekend and on tomorrow's game. But let's see. Last week, you mentioned about the shitty all-star jerseys. And I actually saw them, and I kind of like them.
I don't think they're – I think they're the best ones they've had in a while. But mm-hmm. I think that's because they're boring.
Now, I hate white jerseys, but I think there's just enough white to make, like, the maroon and red pop on the away. Folks, it's easy to find. You know, I don't have to tell you how to use Google. But the blue ones just look like they're supposed to be a Winnipeg jersey. But I thought the red one, the white and red one, looked pretty good. But it is very boring.
Like they're not.
It looks like
okay. The blue one's just like you said, it's just a Winnipeg Jets jersey.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the old Vancouver when they were the black, red, and yellow, like that V cut at the bottom.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's just that jersey, just you know, different color scheme. I don't know.
They're the best they've been in a long time. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Last year's was fucking tough. I'm not gonna lie. The grayscale, it kind of looked like a sheet of loose leaf paper, with just the logo on it, and just a kiss of the color. I mean, the only ones that really stick out, it was when we had the neon ones like 4 years ago.
Oh yeah, the neon black and white ones.
Yeah. Kind of like it was like foreshadowing Dallas's away jersey now, you know, it's the neon black and green or neon.
I think the absolute worst ones might have been when they just fucking put like they blacked them out and put the logo of whatever team they were on.
Oh, yeah, that's when that was like 2-3 years ago.
No, those are the worst, the absolute worst.
And it was like the only thing I really liked about the jersey, it was like the first. I mean, they're common. Well, they're not common now, but it's a common used one. It was all recycled materials went into making the jersey, which I thought was really cool. I'm sure it just tied in with Seattle coming, and Seattle's whole thing is, you know, the fucking climate change arena or something like that, and everything's, you know, about saving the earth, which is tight as fuck. I thought it was a cool concept, but yeah, it was just a black fucking jersey with just a line of your home team color. I mean, I have a blacked out from the blackout series. I think it was like a 2013 series. I have a Oilers Ryan Nugent Hopkins, so it's completely black. I think it has just like the tiniest bit of orange. I think it looks good, but some teams it did not. Like, I guess the Sharks one looked good, but like the teal was so dark. Like it wasn't a bright enough teal. So it didn't look like it had color at all. So some of them were pretty tough.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I can't say I'm excited for the All-Star game. Let's be honest here. They're bringing back the breakaway challenge, which I don't know why they ever got rid of. So that should be interesting. But I'm not sure if I'll be tuning in again this year.
Well, I know it's going to be tough because of COVID and stuff. The last time that I really, like, I was thinking about it because we were talking about the last times we really enjoyed watching it. And you said it's been since like you were a fucking kid. I like the neon era one when they were making their own draft picks and shit with fucking what's his name, John Scott. But I know because of COVID it might not happen. But I'd like to see them bring some of the girls from the PHF up. I think that's what it's called. Yeah, Professional Hockey Federation. Yeah. I thought that one year they did that, well, the first year they did that, it was really successful. And I mean, I've been talking about that day, you know, since. So it obviously left a strong opinion. I just don't know if they would do that, considering I think they had a league wide. I mean, it's a small league, but the PHF went and shut down a little bit because of COVID, like the NHL did. But I don't know if they would be a part of that again this year. But if they're not, I think it's just going to be another boring ass fucking another boring all-star game that they really have lost their way of making it kind of fun. I forgot. What is his name? Donnie Dunphy, dude. I went down a fucking rabbit hole after being sent that shit, and I watched How to Be Deadly. Is like they're like 15-minute little short film, fantastic. And then they got a bunch of like 15 to 45 second little clips. Shit is super original, really fucking good. It reminds me of like a blend of like Trailer Park Boys, Letterkenny, Hardy Bucks, fucking the movie Haggard. It's like really well done, and it's got like that kind of shitty quality like old Trailer Park Boys did. And I love that aesthetic. Like, it's just like a home movie type of vibe. But we went to my cousin, we went to the lake this Friday that just passed, and stayed there overnight, and we did a little fishing. I didn't catch shit. My cousin caught two little bass, but we had to throw them back, weren't big enough. But I showed him that shit, dude, and we've been fucking saying it ever since. I pissed my wife off because I came home drunk as fuck, and I was just saying, we're having a time. I think it's fucking great. I think I've kind of started something with that. I wouldn't be surprised if that becomes a little, you know, in-house little comedic thing between me and my boys. But dude, that is a legendary fucking video. I'm not going to lie. I'm upset that my first time hearing about it was the other day.
I mean, it's a very niche demographic, Donnie Dunphy, but yeah,
I think it's great. And then someone sent it to you also. So,
yeah, the people
I want to thank our fans, because that made my fucking night, along with reading all of John's list of things I need to try. And when I hit the East Coast up one day, my mouth was fucking watering that night. My wife had picked up, she went and got some Mexican food for us. So, like, my food was already here by the time we were done recording. And I didn't even fucking edit. I just went up front and ate because I was just talking about fire-ass food and getting hungry. My mouth was watering. I went out front and just ate. I was like, you know, I'm going to save half of it. It didn't fucking happen. I fucking knocked back everything. But Donnie Dunphy, Having a Time, legendary. Thank you all so much for fucking bringing that into my life.
Yeah. I'm very happy people knew of the legend himself. But without further ado, I think that'll be it. Unless you have anything else to add, Corey.
No, that's it. Thank y'all so much for tuning in. God bless us for having audio quality during a fucking blizzard again. But yeah, we might as well roll out while we still have connection.
Yeah, well, thank you for blessing Corey and I with Donnie Dunphy, and thank you once again for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.
We'll be having a talk.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.